sand began to slide at her hips. I could see the weight of the rocks was almost too much to bear, and I watched her walk straight into the waves with all that weight on her body, with so much purpose in her every step. I thought she might go into the sea and bring the water people back for me. But it was Graham who brought my mother back. She ran out of our house, across the lawn. Graham dove into the midnight water and drew my mother from the grip of the deep. She wrestled her to shore and rocked her daughter's wet limbs in the cradle of her own body. My mother curled her long legs so tightly to her chest as if she wanted them to disappear. My mother still called to the sea from the safety of Graham's arms, her words wet and distant. My mother and Graham stayed locked together like that for so long, I thought the sun might have enough time to rise, push away the moon. But I couldn't watch for the sun. I kept my eyes on my mother as she eyed the sea, knowing without anyone telling me that she wanted to be with the water people more than she wanted to be with me. Fear crept inside of me then, a dark eel slicking through my veins. After Graham walked my mother to the ambulance, she came to hold me once again, wrapping me close enough to sink our fears. I pressed into the thundering wail of her heartbeat. I told Graham I would never need the people from the deep. Graham promised she would never leave me. I latched tight to her promise. As the sirens faded in the distance, I burrowed hard against my Graham so that no one could climb between us, separate my heart from hers. Chapter 1. There is no name for what I am. Boys have their choice of titles: lobsterman, sternman, fisherman. But since I'm a girl, I am none of these. My gender isn't welcome at sea, which is ridiculous since no one is more tied to the moon and the ocean than a female. But maritime lore has always claimed that a girl on a ship is bad luck, even though nearly every sailor in the history of braving the ocean has named his boat after a girl. Men even invented the mermaid to feel safer at sea. I'll always defend my right to fish the water. But today, I don't want to be here. I nudge my wrist forward, pressing against the throttle to make the Rilla Bray quicken. My lobster boat, the one Dad named for me, cuts a certain path through the rough, curling main water. The morning fog parts as I push against its thickness, the displaced mist twisting into thin gray fingers, beckoning me toward deeper waters. I go because I have to, because it's what my father would have wanted. I steer toward the swath of ocean my family has fished for generations while the GPS bleeps out navigation points. I silence the machine and its piercing electric pulses because I don't need technology to find the string of lobster traps my father set into the deep 3 days ago, his last day on Earth. The watery pathway leading to the Gulf of Maine is an artery I've traveled since before I could crawl. Its inlets are as recognizable, as memorable, as the laugh lines that track around my father's eyes. Tracked. The VHF radio above my head wakes with static before I hear Reed's voice. "All in, Rilla Bray?" I pull down the mouthpiece and press the side button to talk. "All in." It's the same response I always give Reed when he checks in on my fishing. All in. These two words let him know I'm on the water, that I'm all right, and that I love him. Things you need a code for when talking over a public channel. A wave of static, and then,
"Charlotte Ann, out at Lip Gully watching for you, Rilla Bray."
The voice is Billy Benson's, captain of the Charlotte Ann, a vessel named for his wife, and I'm not sure if he's watching for me or my boat, or both. I don't have time to respond before Emmett Teal's call comes across.